Welcome to The Forum, the program that educates, motivates, and advocates on behalf of our community. The Forum is sponsored by OSF Healthcare, and we have at-large City Councilwoman Bernice Gordon-Young on the line today. We have a lot of things to talk about. The last time I talked to you on the radio, it was around the time that you were elected to the council. And so this will be our really first time talking to you since you've been on the council. How has it been going?
It's been going amazingly well. Just getting in there, learning the ropes, and just getting acclimated to this role, but certainly an extension of what I've done in the community thus far.
What you expected or more?
You know, I don't know if I went in with any particular expectations, other than to make a difference in this community. And, you know, I feel like I'm on track with that.
Okay.
Having a seat at the table, being able to weigh in, seeing the city from a different perspective than I would have not being on the council.
You and I have talked about at some point, once you get your bearings and legs under you, maybe a month or so from now, let's talk about economic development, programming for residents, and those kinds of things. Don't necessarily want to put you in a crime box, but that's the big thing now. And you came to my mind when there was the shootings where you had all the people, family members that were outside of OSF, because you were there. And some of these incidents happened near where your mom lived. So how were you processing that during that time? What made you decide to go down to OSF?
Well, here's the thing. Regardless of where these incidents are occurring, whether I know people or not, I just care. And I don't go to the scene, like I'm not chasing the ambulance. However, I have just always, when possible, responded to the scene. Not because I'm a council person, but because I am a resident of this community. I care about people, and I don't have to know you to at minimum show up to offer any level of support that I can, whether that is to the first responders, to the victims, the families, whomever I can support, that's just who I am. But as far as the feeling, you know, of course, it's very personal, especially when, you know, there may be a family member who lives nearby or friends. But at the end of the day, you know, again, whether I know you or not, I'm just that person that's going to show up and try to offer some level of support, even just my presence, if that can make a difference for someone.
Yeah, and I should mention for our listeners who are not familiar, besides being a council person, you're a mental health professional. That's your job. And yeah, I remember seeing you at different events. Most notably, there's the one shooting where you were counseling the young lady who had lost a loved one, and the young lady just collapsed in your arms. And you and I have talked about the need for the community to take a deeper look at mental health, the state of mental health, the trauma that, not just in a particular event, but resonates because people are carrying that trauma. Expound on that for me.
Yeah. You know, and that's the thing, like, you know, when these incidents occur, for example, you know, there is this coverage and there is this plethora of people who care. Like, they, you know, become invested in it. You see it all over social media. But then it sort of fades away. What happens to the people who are primarily affected after everyone goes away? Well, they're living with the trauma. And then there's this other piece that we don't talk about a lot, that secondary trauma. Primary trauma, you were the actual victim. Secondary trauma, you were exposed to the incident, whether you were a witness, a first responder. You know, and people carry that, and it can affect them, you know, through forms of like anxiety, PTSD, depression, paranoia. And if we're talking about kids in particular, what does that look like in the classroom? What does that look like with behavior? I was talking yesterday with someone where there was a particular child who was acting up in school. But if you don't know what has happened outside of the classroom, it may just look like behavior. But no, this is someone who is experiencing a form of trauma that's not being addressed. And we know that one of the determinants of violence is exposure to violence. And we've really got to take a look at that. And I believe that as a city, you know, we are taking a great look at mental health and implementing those services more so than we have before.
You, as I mentioned, were instrumental in putting on the bike ride for a safer tomorrow in conjunction with Peoria Police. And let me go down another side road. You have worked with the police department, in the police department. And so you have really kind of a firsthand knowledge in terms of officers being dispatched to crime scenes, looking for suspects, bringing people in, family members, et cetera.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think the 18 years that I spent as a 911 dispatcher was a catalyst for me making a decision to go into mental health. You know, all the years of talking to people who are at their worst or experiencing the most horrific at times tragedies, and to feel helpless. You can only do so much. You can dispatch police, fire, and ambulance. But to be the person on the other end that's talking to them and you can hear the despair in their voice, you know, so that piece is, you know, if I had a preference, and because there's so many layers to that position, but my preference was always to be the person on the other end of the phone, to be that calm voice, to be the one who tried to comfort them until help gets there. But there's so many aspects of that role. You know, we recently talked about, well, it was publicly talked about, you know, the fire personnel, how, you know, people forget that they are human beings as well, and that they are experiencing this secondary trauma. And in some instances, you know, they are right there in the middle of it, witnessing things that the average person wouldn't necessarily see. Mm-hmm. And that takes a toll. And so we all of the systems at some point have some level of exposure to this trauma. And it goes to their families, and if it's unaddressed, then, again, we perpetuate, you know, challenges within the mental health system.
So I got to ask you this. If you were to give a diagnosis, a health diagnosis for the community, what would it be? Are we in, and we're talking about as far as mental health is concerned, are we in good shape? Are we in horrible shape? Are we in, you know, fair shape, or what? Because I'm thinking the community is not that big.
Right.
And per capita, in terms of homicides and gun violence, you've seen the statistics where Peoria exceeds national averages with regard to homicide being the number one cause of death for young males between the age of 15 and 34. It's the number three cause of death nationwide, but number one in Peoria. Okay, with those kinds of numbers and the community being so small, I'm thinking, and I'm not backed by any scientific data, that somebody knows somebody. Everybody knows somebody that's been impacted by that. And when you start talking about secondary trauma, you know, I'm thinking maybe our diagnosis is not that good.
Well, I think it depends. You know, I think that's a great question. Like, what would be a diagnosis for the city of Peoria? If I was to come up with this cumulative diagnosis, it would put us right in the middle in terms of if I did good, fair, poor. It would be fair because there are people who have very limited exposure to violent acts. Life is great based on where they live, where they work, economic status, and so things are great. But when you are experiencing levels of poverty, you are in inadequate housing, your neighborhood is crime-ridden, the infrastructure of your community is just broken, well, that plays a role in your mental health. And so, again, you can take two people in this city and, based on those determinants, have totally different mental health status. Mm-hmm.
And then I'm thinking from an empathetic standpoint, do you want that person whose life is okay and fine and they're not exposed to this kind of thing? We still need those people to be empathetic.
Right.
Because they may have some kind of resources or expertise or a fresh perspective to help out their neighbor.
Absolutely. You know, but we can't fix what we won't acknowledge. And so that's why it's important that we have these conversations. It's important that we expose the inequities. It's important that we recognize, you know, we're not just talking about food deserts to be talking about food deserts. Like, that matters. If you've never experienced some of these things, sometimes it's hard to be empathetic toward it because you just don't get it. That's not a way of life. That's not something that you've experienced. You've never driven in these neighborhoods. And it's one thing to drive your neighborhood. It's another thing to get out of your car. Walk around the neighborhood. Look at, you know, and again, these are things that are being worked on in terms of infrastructure, but that within itself is a process. So we're talking about, you know, dollars, we're talking about investing in all of Peoria. We need all hands on deck. And so although you may not be exposed to it, it doesn't mean you can't help with the problem.
Yeah. I'm curious, how do you process this? You know, you talk about secondary trauma for first responders and stuff like that. Yeah. And my brother is a psychologist, and he talks about how mental health professionals have their, I guess there's some kind of system that you all go through or process where you you kind of know how to decompress and de-stress from dealing with people who have trauma. But
right.
I think a day or so before there was the bike ride, or a day or so after there was the bike ride, we had homicides. Is that has to be frustrating for you?
Yeah, it's always frustrating, you know. But in terms of how do I manage and balance like my own life, you know, and just add in that component of being the lead mental health provider at the Peoria County Jail. You know, hearing the challenges that people face, seeing them go through the legal process related to the crime in which they're charged with, and then severe mental health, where it does take a toll. Day in, day out, you don't know what you're going to get. I always say that they put a production camera, you know, in the middle of what's called intake. It would be probably one of the best watched shows. Because, you, again, it could be total chaos. It could be unexpected crisis, suicide attempts, all kinds of things. So that's just one element. So you take that, all the other things that I do, working with children. And so self-care matters. It's really important. One of the things that I really strive to do is to not allow myself to feel overwhelmed. And what that means is sometimes I have to say, no, thank you. I can't be everywhere and do everything. And I believe in meditation. I start my day off meditating. You know, I take a break in the middle of the day just to sort of gather myself to check in with myself. And I end my day that way. I like to have fun. And I have some amazing friends, amazing colleagues, where we just sort of check in with each other. And that matters. And so in order for me to be able to be available and fully present for my patients, I have to take care of myself. And again, I pride myself on doing that.
Last couple of questions. So based on everything you know about what's going on in the city, at the jail, police department, in the neighborhoods. Give us some pearls of wisdom in terms of advice, what average everyday folks can do to make a dent in this crime problem.
Oh, wow. Well, you know, this is very cliche, but it's very true. It really does start at home. Now, there are some, and I'm not blaming parents, because I always say that there are some amazing parents who have done an amazing job, and peer relationships have played a role in their child steering in the wrong direction. There are some highly educated, brilliant people who've been engaged in some illegal activities, and so we know that education isn't always the gap. But in terms of what can we do as a community, if everyone does something, whether that is you're going to take, you know, the four kids in your neighborhood to this community event, we know that exposure, if you are a nurse and you see a young lady who may be interested, some people just don't know how to get there. You know, be a model. But most importantly, we can all model what we want. We can't, as adults, have difficulty with managing conflict, but then expect our children to know how to do that because they're looking at us as examples. And we can serve in a better role than we have been with that as well. Again, modeling what we want, being clear on the expectations, not lowering the bar for our residents, meaning, but at the same time, understanding that the bar isn't always equal for everyone. And so, again, not forgetting that equity piece and giving folks an opportunity. I also believe in second chances, but I also, most importantly, believe in restorative justice.
Dr. Bernice Gordon-Young, at-large city councilwoman for the city of Peoria. I've been asking you a lot of questions. Anything you wanted to impart that we didn't talk about?
Well, I just want to remind everyone, as far as the city of Peoria, we are working on a strategic plan for 2023, and that kickoff occurred back in June. So there's a lot of things that's going to be coming, you know, for Peoria to continue to progress. We can't get everything, you know, at one time. It's a process, but I'm very optimistic and hopeful that we can get a buy-in of all the residents of Peoria, because it's going to take all of us.
All right. Hey, thanks for being on the forum.
Thank you for having me.
All right. We'll talk to you sometime next month.
Sounds great. All right.
You've been listening to The Forum on WPNV. The Forum airs at 10 a.m. on Saturday and is rebroadcast at 7 p.m. Sunday. We want to leave you with a quote from novelist Alice Walker, who said, "The most common way people give up their power is by thinking they don't have any." Thanks for listening.
Wake up, everybody. No more sleeping in bed. No more backward thinking. Time for thinking ahead.